This is WSFI Spotlight, a conversation with Catholics living in the light.
Hi, everyone. This is Joan McHugh, and I will be your host today on WSFI Spotlight. Today, it is my joy to have as our guest Raymond Arroyo, a familiar name to our WSFI Catholic radio listeners. Raymond, as you know, is a New York Times best-selling author, producer, and lead anchor and managing editor of EWTN News. As the host of The World Over Live, he is seen in more than 250 million homes internationally each week. You can follow him on Facebook and on Twitter at Raymond Arroyo. You know, I want to welcome you, Raymond, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, Joan, I'm delighted to be with you and with all the listeners. It's my pleasure.
Well, thank you. One of the reasons I'm so excited is because I know you're coming to town, and I understand you're going to be here on Monday and Tuesday next week, March 21st and 22nd. Monday, you're going to be at Anderson's Bookstore in LaGrange, Illinois, and on Tuesday evening, you're going to be at St. Monica's Parish in Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin, promoting your new book. Is that correct? That's true.
No, I've been on this book tour, and I'm so looking forward to seeing the folks both in LaGrange as well as in Whitefish Bay. And they're both 7 o'clock events. Monday in LaGrange, I'm at Anderson's Bookstore, and then at St. Monica's the next night. And I'm going to be doing a signing. I'll be doing some talks, Q&A. The whole shebang. So I'm looking forward to it and seeing everybody. So please come, bring the kids. The new Will Wilder series is really all about families and particularly kids. The response has been electric.
This is wonderful, Raymond. You know what? We're going to repeat this at the end of the show. I want to begin. I know you've been covering the campaign, the election, pretty carefully, and I understand that you've had a chance to get to know most of the candidates. And we hear a lot about the importance of the evangelical and Catholic vote. How are they breaking this cycle, and what's behind it? Can you comment?
Well, they're breaking. Certainly, on the Democratic side, it's more of an even split. But Hillary Clinton is still taking the lion's share of Catholics, certainly. On the Republican side, there's a very interesting dynamic. Ted Cruz, because he is an evangelical, was supposed to be the master of his pew mates, and the lightning rod to draw that evangelical support. In fact, we kept hearing about a firewall that he was going to build throughout the South, and that would guarantee him the nomination. Things haven't really turned out that way. As a matter of fact, that both the evangelical and the Catholic vote have broken decisively for Donald Trump, to the consternation of some both religious leaders in both camps, evangelicals and Catholics, as well as I think to some observers. They're kind of puzzled by why are these people breaking for Trump. On the surface, there would seem to be very little in common with the billionaire jet-setting a builder and your rank-and-file Catholics and evangelicals, but I think I've solved a bit of this mystery. In fact, I'm writing a piece about it now. Part of it is the dissatisfaction I think evangelicals and Catholics feel toward the establishment of their party, the Republican Party particularly. And then there's another component that I stumbled on by actually talking to primary voters, people in Alabama and Mississippi and Virginia and Louisiana. I went to some of the polling places, and some of them recognized me, and they would come over, and we had a chance to really talk in depth. And what I discovered is not only are people voting against the political establishment, they're also voting against the church establishment, which I don't think people fully comprehend. But you will know, Joan, and certainly some of the viewers, over the last few years, both evangelical leaders as well as Catholic leaders have sort of embraced particular policy solutions to problems that ail us. And whether that be the environment or immigration policy, there are sizable chunks of conservative Catholics and evangelicals who are disquieted by that direction.
Yes.
They don't mind the moral prescriptives saying, we have to do better on the environment. We owe it to ourselves and our children to protect the environment. They get a little nervous when you start talking about this particular treaty or this particular law. And now we have Catholic leaders and evangelical leaders coming out in letters, open letters, saying, you may not vote for this candidate. Well, that always makes voters, you know, rebel.
Right. Yeah.
And I think we're in that moment now. I mean, the numbers for Trump are astounding. In Massachusetts, 54% of Catholics broke for Donald Trump.
That's unbelievable.
I mean, something is clearly happening there.
That's unbelievable.
It's in the South as well, Sean. You know, you see the same trend.
Something you said initially really caught my attention, that Hillary has the lion's share of Catholics.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of this is tradition. You know, there are an awful lot of Catholics who, remember, the Democratic Party has won, every time they've won the presidency, they've done so with the Catholic vote. Without the Catholic vote, they haven't won it. But almost every election cycle, the Democratic Party takes the majority of Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fact.
Okay.
So what it shows you is that Catholics for a long time have been at odds with their leadership as well as with core tenets of their faith.
Yes.
So now everybody's rending their garments over this vote for Donald Trump, but the Catholics carried Barack Obama to the White House, Bill Clinton to the White House. I mean, you know, this is nothing that happened yesterday.
Yes.
This has been going on for a long time. And I would argue that you have faithful Catholics that I've encountered, which is, you know, kind of astounding. But you have faithful Catholics who are backing Donald Trump, and they're doing so as a check. They don't want the church politicized,
yes.
And they feel that there are some that have begun to politicize the church and somehow tie our doctrine to specific policy agendas and specific candidates. And you know, Americans of any stripe just don't like that.
I know they don't. You're absolutely right about that. You know, I'd like to ask you a little bit about your thoughts about Marco Rubio, who suspended his campaign. Do you think his attacks on Trump helped or hurt him? And what about the attacks on Trump?
No, I think they absolutely hurt him. I think Marco's camp, people in his camp who I know, and I know Marco, I think they would all acknowledge that those attacks hurt Marco, because Marco was kind of seen as the golden boy and the inspirational, you know, candidate. And suddenly he was turning into an attack dog. And, you know, you're not going to out-Trump Trump.
And he tried to do that. Yeah.
He did. Yeah, he tried to meet Trump on Donald Trump's arena, and that's always a bad idea. You know, what you try to do is draw the candidate out into your arena,
exactly.
Into your comfort zone.
Exactly.
He didn't do that. It was a bad move, and he paid the political price, severe one.
But Raymond, what about the attacks on Trump? They just seem to fall off him like you know, water. Like they just don't stick to him.
Well, because Trump, I think, look, I've been in Washington for almost, you know, covering Washington for almost 20 years, more than 20 years now. And what I've seen long before I came to EWTN, there has been this sizable group of voters, and now I'm going to stretch the analogy and say there's also a sizable group of Catholics
mm-hmm.
who have been unhappy with their leadership and screaming out that for certain issues to be addressed, whether those issues be pro-life issues, whether those issues be immigration concerns. There are people really hurting in this country, and I know them. I've talked to them. I've been with them. Many in the political class haven't, and I don't think they appreciate. In fact, I know they don't appreciate the level of pain and suffering that the average American is going through today.
Yes.
And these people are Catholics and evangelicals, and they're taking a hard look at the whole situation. So they see this guy, Trump, who is echoing their concerns. By the way, Joan, these are the same concerns that were echoed by Ross Perot, Pat Buchanan, and others.
Yes.
And so it's this long, festering voting block that has been ignored. Well, this is called payback, political mm-hmm. payback. And I think you're also seeing, when you see this number of Catholics moving in a direction like this, it also shows you there's some discontent in the pews.
Yes.
And they don't like the politicization of many of these issues by church leaders.
Yes.
And they feel there should be a dialogue and a conversation around the issues rather than pretending that, you know, a treaty at the UN is suddenly dogmatic and, you know, but the life mm-hmm. issue is a secondary consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what's fueling Trump's rise. It is less to do with Donald Trump than it does with the electorate that Trump is aware of and has apprehended, and everyone else has ignored these people.
Raymond, that's the most interesting take that I've heard so far about the Catholics and what's going on. It's kind of like a protest, and they've kind of joined in. It makes sense. I get that.
Well, they don't want to leave. Look, these are faithful people, and I've challenged them, in my conversations with them. Uh-huh. I said, look, people are raising real challenges here. This guy, he's supported. He claims there are good things that Planned Parenthood does. He's crass. He says these things. George Weigel and Robbie George and other Catholic leaders, in D.C. at least, they've derided him as a vulgarian, an oaf. You know what these people mm-hmm. tell me? Raymond, I have year after year voted for people who made promises to me and nothing came of it.
Isn't that
what
amazing?
Do we have to lose with Trump?
Isn't that something?
So that's kind of where they are. And look, he is a charismatic figure. I have to tell you this.
Mm-hmm.
There are two candidates I've seen in the last 8 years or so that literally have lit up a room. I've never seen anything like it. It's both... It defies politics. And the last candidate I saw do this was a guy named Barack Obama.
Oh, my gosh.
And in Iowa. I will never forget watching him in a room in Iowa. He and John McCain were in the same hotel, and I went from one rally to another, and it was like walking from a nighttime rally to the noonday sun with Barack Obama. It was
something
electric.
Unbelievable.
I feel the same way about Trump. I walked into a rally of his in Mississippi. It was one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen. People standing for hours waiting outside. 3,000 people in an arena, 8,000 in a parking lot. I've never seen anything like it. He's like the Pope making
it is incredible. Raymond, we only have a couple of minutes left before the break. I just wanted you to weigh in about the establishment reaction to Trump's popularity. What's driving this, the establishment's reaction?
Well, this is Donald Trump is an outlier. He's an outsider.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Nobody has hooks into him. Look, this is the other part of his appeal. On the surface, people say, look, this guy, he's a billionaire. He doesn't need their money. He's not coming here to steal from us. That's just mm-hmm. I'm talking to you. This is the common man's view of Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
They feel he's not bought and paid for. And the establishment in Washington is going into apoplexy.
Yes.
Because they see their entire careers flashing before their eyes because they rely on lobbyists and special interest groups to keep the skids of Washington greased.
Yes, I get that.
If Trump fulfills any of his promise and drops the hammer on this stuff, that becomes a big problem. And when this much power and money is on the line, things get ugly.
You know, I guess I'm so naive. It's hard for me to believe that some of these good Republicans that I think well of are really that way. They're really, holding on to their money and to their backers.
Well, look, there's some very good Republicans. There's some very good Democrats I know who suffer every day, voting their conscience and trying to do the right thing. Those people exist, okay, on both sides of the aisle.
Yes.
I know a lot of Republicans who've been in the trenches on human rights issues and legislation to protect women and their lives mm-hmm. and little girls all around the world. These are heroes, Chris Smith and others. But then you do have to step back and say, okay, but look at the beast as a whole.
Yes.
It is fueled by special interest money, and lobbyists. And the people, the common man going to the voting booth says, I don't have a voice. Trump is my voice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why all of these criticisms are bouncing off of him. The other thing you have to realize is we're talking about a beloved reality star mm-hmm. who for years carved out a personality that everyone knows.
Yes.
So you see, we expect him. I'll put it this way. If Don Rickles came to dinner at your house and he didn't insult four or five people at the table,
right.
you would be disappointed.
Right.
The truth is Don Rickles is a very nice man. I've met him before. He's a very sweet, nice man. Cares about his family and his
sure,
dogs.
Sure.
He's a dear person. But you don't want to see that Don Rickles. You want the performer
exactly,
you know.
Exactly.
Ditto for Donald Trump.
Sure.
They want Donald Trump to come out, point at somebody and say, you're fired, get out of here. You want him to be tough and acerbic and a little surly around the edges. He's the tough guy. He's the swaggering millionaire. If he wasn't like that, mm-hmm. the audience would be disappointed. Donald Trump is fulfilling audiences' expectations.
Yes, but Raymond.
Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, they failed to fulfill those audience expectations,
yeah.
And that's why they had to leave the race.
I see that. I understand that.
No one's going to move for Donald Trump's canonization tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
But again, when I talk to these people and I raise just the issue you're raising,
mm-hmm.
he's surly. He's, you know,
yes,
these people,
yes.
some of people you respect are saying he's a vulgarian. And they are literally dismissing these charges.
Yes.
And they tell me, I don't say this, they tell me, Raymond, we are sick and tired of it. We
yes.
need someone who's going to be a little tougher and somebody who's going to be
yes.
strong and articulate our voice. That's why he's thriving. It's not a mystery, but
yes.
the establishment in Washington is making a huge problem for themselves. They should, at this point in the race, embrace him and find some way to yeah. latch on and attach themselves
right.
to the enthusiasm that he has inspired. And if they were really smart political operators, they would attach their agenda to his or meld it in so it looks like it's the same thing. They're not doing that for whatever reason. And my sense is they are in danger of killing, no matter who the Republican
yes.
nominee is. That person will not be able to beat Hillary Clinton.
Raymond, on that note, we're going to have to stop and take a short break. And,
oh, that's a good place.
I'll look forward to rejoining you in a minute.
Hi, this is Wes Riccio from the Holy Family Catholic Bookstore. If you have a child, grandchild, or godchild being baptized, receiving their first Holy Communion, or being confirmed, remember that Holy Family has the area's largest selection of gifts, accessories, and supplies to make their special day more memorable. For baptism, we have cradle medals, baby Bibles, wall crosses, and nightlights. We have beautiful baptismal gowns and accessories, as well as invitations and cards. If you have a First Holy Communion in your family, we have a wide variety of mass books and gift sets, rosaries and medals. We have exquisite veils for the girls and ties for the boys, along with all of the necessary party supplies. Our suggestions for new confirmants include personal-sized Bibles, prayer books, and other spiritual readings that can follow them through their lifetime. And don't forget the godparents and sponsors. We have gifts and cards for them as well. The Holy Family Catholic Bookstore is at 9249 Old Green Bay Road, Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. More information is available on Facebook.
Are you retired or near retirement? Do you want to keep a larger amount of your assets in a safe place with guaranteed interest rates to protect yourself from a huge market swing? Are you amazed at how low the interest rates are at your bank? If you said yes to any or all of those questions, you may want to call me, Matt Tomlinson, at Catholic Financial Life to discuss our guaranteed fixed rate annuities. Call 847-548-MATT, 847-548-6288. Products not available in all states.
Listen at 7 o'clock p.m. every Tuesday to WSFI Spotlight, a half-hour conversation with outstanding Catholics from our community and around the world. WSFI Spotlight re-airs on Saturday at 3:30 p.m. or listen on demand anytime by subscribing to our podcast. Visit WSFIradio.org for more information. It's WSFI Spotlight, a conversation with Catholics living in the light. Only on WSFI Catholic Radio, Tuesdays at 7 o'clock p.m.
Did you know you can listen to WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio online? Visit WSFIradio.org and click on Listen Live. That's WSFIradio.org and Listen Live.
Hi, everyone. This is Joan McHugh, your host, and I'm having the pleasure of speaking with Raymond Arroyo, familiar name to our WSFI Catholic Radio listeners. He's the lead anchor and managing editor of EWTN News and the host of The World Over Live. We've been talking politics with Raymond. He knows the candidates. He's met them all. He's so well-versed in all the politics of today. But I want to switch the subject now briefly because he's written a new book, and I really would like to hear about it. It's the first book in his middle grade series, and it went on sale last week. It's called Will Wilder, The Relic of Perilous Falls, published by Crown. The book has also received a great review in the Wall Street Journal. So Raymond will be in town next week, March 21st, Monday evening, and Tuesday the 22nd. On Monday, he'll be at Anderson's in LaGrange bookstore. And then on Tuesday evening, he'll be at St. Monica's Parish in Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin at 7 p.m. And he'll have his new book. He'll be signing, and he'll be talking to you. And please go and don't miss him if you can, if you have time.
So, yeah, both events are at 7 p.m., and you can get all the details at RaymondArroyo.com, Joan.
Oh, good.
All the events are there, the times, the addresses, everything.
RaymondArroyo.com. So with that said, Raymond, talk a little bit. Tell us what your book is about. I don't really know about it. So.
Well, it is about an impetuous 12-year-old boy who has a supernatural gift that he doesn't fully appreciate. And Will Wilder is the lead character's name. Mm-hmm. Will Wilder accidentally hurts his brother in a backyard accident, breaks his arm. And Will is punished for 2 weeks. And while he's on yard duty, burying trees behind a church as a punishment, he learns that his great-grandfather has collected these rare relics and historic antiquities in the middle of town. And he learns the background on a relic, a particular relic, a finger bone of St. Thomas that supposedly holds the floodwaters of the town back, but more importantly to Will, it can heal. And so Will imagines, look, if I can borrow this relic for a little bit, touch it to my brother, heal his arm, I might get out of my punishment. This is going to be a good deal. So he and his friends engineer a plan to basically break into this multi-chambered installation and borrow the relic. Well, things don't go quite according to plan, and Will accidentally uncorks an ancient evil, and his destiny is opened up before him. And it's really a tale, Joan, of nurturing
amazing.
The gifts we're given.
Yes.
And it's about, to me, it's about family. Will learns about his great-grandfather, his great-aunt Lucille, who's central to the story. And these relics and antiquities are introduced in the plot that actually exist, that kids can go and find and see in person at museums, at churches, at libraries all over the world. So it becomes kind of a scavenger hunt through history for kids. But I love the idea that families are reading it together. It's a wild, fun adventure for kids. In fact, a book list, which is the American Library Association's journal, they described it as Percy Jackson meets Indiana Jones. They said it's, you know, it's the next big middle grade series for kids looking for adventure. So it's been warmly received, and I have been so touched by the students and the parents who've embraced Will.
I'm intrigued, Raymond, how you even came up with this tale.
Well, as you know, I've covered relics and you know, and antiquities for a long time. Mm-hmm. But these actually started as bathtub tales that I told my children while they were bathing when they were smaller. So that's where the characters came from. Mm-hmm. Will and his kind of offbeat, dysfunctional family, they were part of those bathroom tales. As they got older and as I got older, I was trying to situate them in a narrative that would work. And my sons and I were in Ireland and read about a relic stolen off the wall of a cathedral. Now, this relic had been there since the 13th century.
All right.
It was a relic of St. Lawrence O'Toole, his heart. And I thought, with all the gold and sapphires and diamonds in this cathedral, why would a thief go through the trouble of cutting bars and stealing a relic? What do they seek to gain?
Did you find out?
That was the question that lodged in the back of my mind, and that was really the key that opened Will Wilder and all of his tales to me. The next question was, what if that 12-year-old kid I'd been telling my children about, what if he stole the relic and he had good reason to do so?
Mm-hmm.
And what if he was part of an ancient prophecy that his family has been protecting for decades? And that was the beginning. That was the germ. But I love it. It really is about the ties of family.
Yes.
And how our forefathers and foremothers really light our way into the future. And Will slowly but surely apprehends that. It's also about what every great children's book is about, the battle between good and evil.
Of course.
And Will wages a war against evil, both externally and, more importantly, internally.
Would this be something that the family could kind of read kind of together?
That's what I've been getting letters from families over the last 3 weeks where they've been reading it together. And or the mother, after the girls burned through it, said, Mom, you have to read this. Then the mother starts reading it, and she sends me this long review. So it's been, that is what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted children and parents to read this story together. I wanted kids to be to go on a fun, wild ride.
Yes.
And I wanted parents to get something else. This is a book that works on two levels. You know, Walt Disney used to say, and I'm in Disney World now, so I'm in the perfect spot to utter this line. Walt Disney used to say, my films are for kids and for kids at heart.
Oh, beautiful.
And I write for the same. I write
beautiful.
For the same.
Beautiful. I'm sure your book is going to have tremendous success. It'll be in all major bookstores and
it is everywhere. It's
Amazon.
At Barnes and Noble, Amazon, Walmart carries it. You can get it from Amazon and Books a Million. Anywhere books are sold, your local booksellers, they all have it, and it really has sold very well. It's only been on sale not yet a week, and the reports
amazing.
Have been incredible.
It's wonderful. I think one of the first things I'm going to do is order it for my grandkids because they're 11 and 12, some of them. And
they're the perfect ages. Really,
perfect.
This book is eight and up is really 8 to 800. And the thing I love about it is that there are two things that are rare in a middle grade series of this type.
Mm-hmm.
One is you can actually see and touch and find those relics in life. You can go to museums and places and see them. The other thing is this is one of the few middle grade series that has an intact family around the protagonist. Normally the kid is an orphan or he's looking for his parents or he's abandoned. Will has his whole family around him and they complicate and help him on his journey.
Isn't that wonderful?
It's a fun ride.
So how long did it take you to do this book?
7 years.
Oh,
for the first
right.
book. 7 years.
7 years. Seven is biblical number.
It is. It is. And maybe that's why I had to go through seven. It just took me a lot of time to refine it and find the story. I mean, I finally, after much, like Will, I bumped around in the darkness for a little bit.
Sure.
But, finally found what I was supposed to do with this story. And it presented itself very quickly once I was there. And it's neat because in every book of the series, Will encounter well-known historic relics and items of antiquity and pretty fearsome foes that I won't ruin by talking about.
Okay.
But it has been, and there's a lot of humor and comedy in the books. It's a fun mix, and it's very rare to find something like that.
I don't have
Will Wilder has been doing great things.
I don't have the Wall Street Journal review in front of me, but how did they endorse you? What did they say?
Yeah, well, Megan Cox Gurdon, who is of course great children. She reviews all the children's books for the journal. But they were just very warm and said, "Look, this is a fantastic adventure. It combines the Catholic lore with a rattling good story and." And it is about these larger questions of good and evil and the gifts we're all given and that we have to nurture, not only for ourselves, but for the good of those around us and sometimes our whole town and maybe the world. And that's an important thing for children to apprehend. I had a little boy write me, a fifth grader, and he said, I felt like I was Will at every point in the Will Wilder book.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
And he said, And at the end of his letter, he was so cute, he said, "I've learned that a 12-year-old and his actions can really change the world." And, if that's the only thing anybody ever gets from this series, I am more than thrilled.
You have more than achieved, Raymond. You know, we're going to have to end on that note, unfortunately or fortunately. It's something to take away from this interview. It's what a gift you're giving children and families.
Oh, you're very kind, Joan.
Well, no, it's true. I can't wait to go get it for my grandkids.
You read it first.
Don't
just
worry,
make sure
I
you
can't
read
wait.
It first.
I'm going to go get it. And then don't forget to check it out now and go to Anderson's Bookstore in LaGrange on Monday evening at 7 o'clock. Raymond will be there signing his book. And then go on Tuesday night, the 22nd, to St. Monica's Parish in Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin, and say hello to Raymond and buy 20 copies of this book to give to all the kids you love. So, Raymond, it's been wonderful talking with you. Congratulations on this book, and may you have success. I'm sure it will.
Well, thank you, Joan.
Be a bestseller.
Will Wilder and the Relic of Perilous Fold, I wrote to take kids on a journey, and I have to tell you, it's taken me on an incredible one.
And us too now. So thanks for that. I love being with you, Raymond. Thank you for this time.
This has been WSFI Spotlight. For more information on this or any other program, email info@wsfiradio.org.